Today is Tuesday, the 19th of May, and you are listening to the World Socialist website. Democratic Party union apparatus conspire to shut down powerful New York rail strike. International Workers' Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees, May 18, 2026. On Monday evening, New York Governor Kathy Hochul announced on social media that the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, the MTA, and the five Long Island Railroad, LIRR, unions had reached a tentative agreement to end the powerful three-day strike. Service is to resume Tuesday at 12 p.m. Not a single term of the agreement has been publicly released. Asked at Monday night's news conference about the contents of the deal, a union representative told reporters, quote, "Due to the nature of the negotiations, we cannot discuss the specifics," end of quote. The International Workers' Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees, the IWA-RFC, calls on the 3,500 LIRR workers to demand the immediate full and public disclosure of every term of the agreement that has been negotiated in their name. No worker should be compelled to vote on or live under a contract they have not seen, have not read, and have not had the time to study and discuss collectively. The way in which the strike is being ended exposes the contempt which the trade union apparatus and the entire political establishment in New York have for the workers. Workers are being ordered back to work before any ratification vote on the basis of a contract whose contents remain a closely guarded secret between the MTA management, the five union heads, and the political establishment in Albany and City Hall. Everyone has agreed to the deal, but the workers themselves. Whenever the vote is eventually held, it will be held with workers already back at work, the leverage of the strike dissipated, and a recommendation to ratify already in place from the same officials who shut down the strike. This is a flagrant violation of the most elementary principles of democratic procedure. The entire framework of the negotiations was conducted as a conspiracy against the workers. Hochul publicly denounced the LIRR workers as, quote, reckless and as, quote, the highest paid workers of any railroad in the nation, end of quote. The Hochul-appointed MTA and the officials of the five unions agreed to a concessions framework, 9.5% over 3 years, with the, quote, dispute narrowed to the fourth-year raise. This is under conditions in which the cost of living in New York has risen by more than 18% since 2022, median rents exceed $3,800 a month, and food prices are up nearly 25%. As for the New York mayor, Zoran Mandani, a member of the Democratic Socialists of America, who was elected on a campaign that appealed to popular opposition to inequality, he refused for 3 days to offer LIRR workers a single word of support. His one public statement on the strike directed riders to the MTA strike-breaking shuttle buses. But the most important fact about the past 3 days is this. The strike has demonstrated the enormous strength of the working class in the capital of global finance capital, New York City. This is what the entire political establishment fears, and it is what drove every party in the room to shut the strike down. Despite the legal and political apparatus arrayed against them, the 3,500 LIRR workers brought North America's largest commuter rail to a halt. The MTA's scab shuttle buses ran nearly empty. MTA chief Jen O'Liber was forced to acknowledge Monday that ridership on the substitute buses had been, quote, pretty light. Out of 13,000 daily seats provided, only some 2,100 commuters used them. The other 298,000 daily LIRR riders telecommuted, found alternatives, or simply stayed home rather than scab on the strike. The issue is not the weakness of the workers, but the treachery of the union apparatus. After seeking to prevent a strike through mediation and appeals to the Trump administration, the LIRR unions worked to shut it down as quickly as possible once it was begun. The 40,000 subway and bus workers of TWU Local 100, whose contract had simultaneously expired on May 15th, were kept on the job under an expired contract and used as strike-breaking infrastructure through shuttle bus operations. Just as the LIRR unions dutifully enforced the Anti-Strike Railway Labour Act, The TWU bureaucracy enforces New York's hated Taylor Law, which bans public employees from striking. In 2008, Local 100 signed an affidavit forswearing the right to strike in exchange for the reinstatement of automatic dues check-off. A joint LIRR-TWU walkout, backed by the active sympathy of nurses, teachers, municipal employees and the broader working class across the region, would have shut down the financial capital of American capitalism. The IWA-RFC calls on the LIRR workers to form rank-and-file committees, independent of the trade union apparatus, and take the following steps immediately. 1. Demand the full text of the agreement. Every term, every clause, every side letter, released publicly in full before any vote takes place. No vote should be held until workers across all five unions have had the chance to read the contract, to discuss it collectively at mass meetings under their own control at every yard, station and depot, and to weigh it against their demands. 2. Prepare to reject any sell-out contract. That the entire political establishment, including officials who publicly attack the workers from the moment they walked out, has signed off on the contract before the workers themselves had read a word of it, is proof that this agreement is designed to break the strike, not to meet the workers' demands. If the contract presented to the membership does not meet workers' demands, it must be voted down and the strike must be resumed. 3. Elaborate the non-negotiable demands of the workers. In opposition to the concessions framework accepted by the apparatus, the workers should demand immediate double-digit wage increases to offset years of below-inflation contracts and the full retroactive application of those increases, the restoration of the cost of living allowances, the rejection of every productivity concession, including any proposal for reduced crew sizes, extended shifts, or harsher scheduling, the full restoration of health care coverage with no premium increases and no fare hikes on riders. The LIRR strike has demonstrated in just 3 days the immense power of the working class, exposing how quickly the, quote, normal functioning of economic life depends on the labour of workers. Ending the strike behind closed doors has not changed any of the conditions that produced it. Soaring living costs, decades of concessions and a political establishment that insists workers must accept, quote, fiscal reality to pay for war and the enrichment of the oligarchs. Across the United States and internationally, anger is rising over inflation, layoffs, attacks on public services and the diversion of society's resources to war and repression. Workers are searching for a way to fight. The ruling class and its bureaucratic agents are responding by trying to isolate struggles, impose settlements without rank-and-file control, and prevent the emergence of a unified movement that challenges the oligarchy's dictate that everything be sacrificed for profit. The IWA-RFC urges LIRR workers and transit workers to take the next step, organize independently, contact us immediately to begin building rank-and-file committees that are controlled by workers themselves, insist on full transparency and democratic decision-making, and prepare a broader counter-offensive, uniting workers across rail, transit, schools, hospitals and workplaces throughout New York and beyond, against the austerity and strike-breaking of the Democratic Party, the corporations and the financial oligarchy they serve. Trump threatens renewed attack on Iran as emergency G7 finance summit opens in Paris. Alex Lantier, May 19, 2026. US President Donald Trump threatened Iran with a resumption of bombing yesterday as US-Iran talks collapsed again and an emergency summit of G7 finance ministers met in Paris to discuss the global economic turmoil caused by US-Israeli aggression against Iran. The U.S. Navy continues to blockade Iran and exports of oil, gas and fertilizers through the Strait of Hormuz that are critical to the world economy are still blocked. Ahead of a National Security Council meeting today on Iran, Trump had threatened on Sunday that, quote, the clock is ticking for Iran and that, quote, there won't be anything left of them unless Iranian officials, quote, get moving fast. Yesterday morning, Trump posted images on social media of himself pressing a red nuclear button and nuclear explosions going off across the Earth's surface. He followed up with threats and outrage at Iran's refusal to agree to the terms he demanded. Quote, I can tell you one thing, they're dying to sign a deal, Trump claimed in an interview published in Fortune magazine. But they make a deal and then they send you a paper that has no relationship to the deal you made. I say, are you people crazy? End of quote. It is evident, in fact, that the war Washington and the Israeli regime launched against Iran on February 28 has produced a debacle. The world economy is grinding to a halt, energy prices are soaring, but the U.S.-Israeli war has still failed to bend Iran to Washington's will. Iranian negotiators turned down the U.S. offer Trump claimed they were, quote, dying to sign, and Pakistani officials overseeing U.S.-Iran talks claimed U.S. and Iranian negotiators, quote, keep moving their goalposts, end of quote. Axios reported that Washington had rejected an Iranian counteroffer in an article citing unnamed top U.S. officials. Quote, U.S. officials say President Trump wants a deal to end the war, but it's considering resuming it due to Iran's rejection of many of his demands and refusal to make meaningful concessions on its nuclear program, it wrote. It's time for the Iranians to throw a bit of candy out, the U.S. officials had said. Otherwise, the U.S. will have to continue negotiations through bombs, end of quote. Trump thereafter posted on social media that Qatari, Saudi, and UAE monarchs claiming they had asked him to, quote, hold off on our planned military attack on the Islamic Republic of Iran, which was scheduled for tomorrow, end of quote. He claimed that, quote, a deal will be made which will be very acceptable to the United States of America as well as all countries in the Middle East and beyond. Later yesterday, Trump said he had postponed the attack for, quote, 2 or 3 days, a short period of time, end of quote. The world is clearly teetering on the brink of a renewed U.S.-Israeli aggression against Iran. Given Washington's record of launching surprise attacks amid negotiations with Iran, even its claims that the attack has been postponed cannot be taken at face value. The Israeli regime, regardless, is continuing to prosecute its war against Lebanon. It announced that it had carried out 100 military strikes since Friday, with its strikes killing 5 people, including 2 children in southern Lebanon, on Sunday. Lebanese media reported that Israeli strikes had killed an Islamic Jihad commander, Wael Abdel Halem, and his 17-year-old daughter. These strikes continue in violation of a truce negotiated and signed on April the 17th. The U.S.-Israeli war on Iran is choking off desperately needed energy and fertilizer exports, with cascading impacts on global industry and agriculture and sharp increases in fuel and food prices that are devastating the world's economy. With oil spiking at well over $100 to $110 per barrel and inflation rising in major advanced economies internationally, the war is also shaking financial markets, threatening a market crash. In recent days, major investors have reacted to rising inflation by dumping government bonds that they saw were not offering a large enough return. The result has been a crisis in government financing in heavily indebted countries, including the United States, Britain, France, Italy, and Japan. These countries' debts, measured as a percentage of their gross domestic product, rises to a massive 123%, 100%, 112%, 137%, and 225% respectively, making these governments highly vulnerable to sudden shifts in interest rates. In recent days, bankers and financial officials have grown increasingly concerned as investors' dumping of bonds massively increased interest rates paid in these countries. These rates surged to 4.6% for 10-year US Treasury debt, 5.13% for 10-year British gilt debt, and 4.17% for 30-year Japanese debt. There are fears in ruling circles that the sell-off in bond markets could ultimately extend as well to stock and other financial markets, provoking a global crash. Bankers and financial officials openly refer to the close connection between the Iran war and the resulting economic and financial turmoil. Subhadra Rajapar, an analyst for French bank Societe Generale, told Bloomberg Television, quote, "Bond yields definitely feel like they are getting unhinged," end of quote. While ATFX global analyst Nick Twydale said, quote, "The fact that we are now seeing data backing up inflationary fears that have been in the market since the Middle East conflict started, I think is key," end of quote. The two-day G7 Finance Ministers Summit in Paris opened yesterday as the major imperialist powers try to come to grips with the impact of this war. Over recent weeks, the G7 countries, US, Canada, Britain, France, Italy, Germany, Japan, carried out the world's largest ever release of oil from strategic petroleum reserves. They injected over 400 million barrels of oil into global markets to prevent a collapse of the world economy caused by the war's blocking of the Strait of Hormuz. Financial officials referred directly to the possibility of a collapse in government debt markets and a crisis in the financing of major governments with broader financial and economic implications. Quote, "We are no longer in a period where public debt is not a subject," said French Finance Minister Roland Lescure, who is hosting the talks, while European Central Bank EBC Chief Christine Lagarde, asked about the bond market crash, simply replied, "I always worry, that's my job." End of quote. The Iran war and growing tensions among the major imperialist powers are at the center of the talks. Growing US-European tensions around the war exploded when Trump reacted to German Chancellor Friedrich Merz's complaint that Washington has, quote, "no strategy for the war" by withdrawing US troops stationed in Germany in the context of the NATO alliance aimed at Russia. U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, as he arrived yesterday in Paris, demanded that the other G7 countries impose even more stringent sanctions on Iran to block funding for its, quote, "war machine," end of quote. Quote, "These discussions are not easy. I'm not going to tell you that we agree on everything, including, of course, first and foremost, with our American friends with whom we have fundamental disagreements, particularly on the future of international trade," said French Finance Minister Lescure. He said the G7 would push for more coordination to monitor markets, anticipate supply disruptions, and develop alternative sources for key raw materials. What is entirely absent from these discussions in ruling circles, however, is any significant criticism, let alone condemnation, of the policy of unrestrained military aggression against Iran and genocide in Gaza. It is ever more clear that these policies threaten workers around the world with economic and financial collapse, with incalculable consequences. The decisive political question today is the international unification of the working class movement in workplaces, schools, and working class neighborhoods in order to halt capitalism's accelerated downward spiral into global war. Quote, "We should all unite. New York bus drivers speak out in support of Long Island Railroad strike." Sandy English, Elliot Murtaugh, Alden Woodson. May 18, 2026. Late Monday night, the five unions representing Long Island Railroad workers and the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, the MTA, reached a deal to end the powerful three-day strike, the first LIRR walkout in 32 years. No terms of the agreement were immediately disclosed. The unions are ordering their approximately 3,500 members back on the job without any clear understanding of what was agreed to, let alone an opportunity to vote on it. Every indication is that this deal is a sellout and must be opposed. Governor Kathy Hochul, who previously slandered strikers as, quote, "reckless" and sought to pit workers and riders against them, gloated on X about the deal, quote, "Tonight the MTA reached a fair deal with the five LIRR unions that delivers raises for workers while protecting riders and taxpayers," end of quote. The strike by approximately 3,500 LIRR workers has paralyzed the traffic for about 950 trains across its network, serving roughly 250,000 daily riders. No trains operated since Friday. Service is set to resume in phases starting at noon on Tuesday. The strike followed years of fruitless negotiations with the MTA, the state agency which operates the LIRR and Metro North commuter lines, as well as subway and bus service, in New York City over wages and healthcare costs. Workers have seen their incomes eroded through inflation, and a range of other issues are pressing on the workers, ranging from healthcare to sick leave. Democratic Socialists of America DSA Mayor Zoran Mandani, who was elected last November on a wave of social anger against inequality, promising free buses and taxes on the rich, has still not given even verbal support to the strikers, much less visited the picket lines. In a statement Monday night, the International Workers' Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees, the IWA-RFC, urged LIRR workers to, quote, demand the immediate full and public disclosure of every term of the agreement that has been negotiated in their name. It continued, quote, the strike has demonstrated the enormous strength of the working class in the capital of global finance, New York City. A joint walkout of LIRR and New York subway and bus workers, backed by the active sympathy of nurses, teachers, municipal employees, and the broader working class across the region, would have shut down the financial capital of American capitalism. The WSWS spoke to transit workers at the East New York bus depot about the strike. Quote, get these people back what they want, a bus driver said. Meet the demand so we could move forward, because it's not just fair. I think what they are aiming for, they should get it. That's it, bottom line. We all should unite collectively, do what we need to do to get done, because it's the only way it's going to get done. And we collectively do it, you know, as a whole, and stand on it, and be consistent and mean it. You know, we move the city. The city don't move us. End of quote. The contract for 40,000 bus and subway drivers in Transport Workers Union Local 100 also expired Saturday, the same day the strike began. Asked what he was looking for in the new contract, the driver stressed the health and safety issues. The bus facility, he said, has had problems with asbestos exposure, among other things, and on the buses themselves, a number of drivers have been subject to assaults. Quote, it's time to lock in, time to stick together, unify, unite, don't settle for less, and fight for what's ours. Another bus driver said the LIRR strikers, quote, they deserve their demands. I feel like the bus operators should also go on strike. And I'm hearing that since I'm on probation for being a new hire, and if I commit to the terms, I could possibly be fired. I don't think that's right at all. I'm definitely supportive of my brothers here at the MTA and the union. I feel like we deserve it. We work hard. We do a lot. We deal with a lot of people, and I feel like we need more than what they are giving us. End of quote. On the TWU contract, he said the key issues for him include definitely a raise. I feel like we deserve more. I feel like we shouldn't have to pay for tolls when we're crossing the bridges, because a lot of us can't live here in our own city that we work in because we can't afford it. Also, they only allow us 30 minutes of swing time, which is lunch. I feel like we should get a minimum of at least an hour. Shifts are usually between 8 and 12 hours, end of quote. The WSWS noted that Mandani won on a program of affordability and making buses free, and that the MTA police were present at that very moment taking people off buses and issuing citations. The worker responded, Mandani speaks a lot, but he doesn't do a lot. I feel like he should be doing a lot more, especially for our city workers. They have all this money to support the war, but us that are actually here working and busting our butts, we can't even afford to live in a regular building here in our own city. The rent is high, food is high, everything is so high, and I feel like they should be supporting us more than they're supporting a war that really has no meaning, killing people. Other bus drivers were emphatic about the need for unity and that the MTA's offers fall far short. One driver told the WSWS, they're offering us 68 cents for a pay increase. That is no good, and they want to take something away from us in addition. They want to take away our medical coverage. I don't accept that. We want to get improved wages and health coverage, not less. I would be in favour of bringing us on strike together with the LIRR strike. Think what we could do. A driver of 26 years added, quote, it is well needed for transit workers to join the LIRR strike. Another spoke to LIRR workers directly, quote, hold the fort, don't give up until they give you what you want. For these articles and more, go to the World Socialist website, wsws.org. For the World Socialist website, this has been Carol Diviak.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.